Last game against Hankook when I was actually so close. I was like, please don't let me lose. This is one game. One game and I'm in the open.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Zwei Null, the Team Leviathan Gaming Podcast, episode number 3. My name is Jagras, and I'm joined on the hosting desk by Spiro. What up, Spiro?
Hey, Jagras. Welcome, everyone. Yeah, we've got some things to talk about. It's been, I guess you could say, a little bit of a slow week in Gwent. Well, the upcoming week, at least. But got some things to talk about upcoming, I guess, events that are coming to Gwent, which is going to be quite exciting, I guess.
But firstly, we do need to introduce our lovely guests. We have Shaggy.
Hello there, everyone. It's good to be here.
And we have Danarai.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for the invitation.
Mm-hmm. So why don't you guys start by just introducing yourselves for people who maybe don't follow competitive Gwent for one reason or another.
Yeah, sure. So I'm the Shaggy Nuts. I'm the best Gwent player in the world. And I'm going to prove it this year by winning World Masters and every single Open. So yeah, that's about all. And if you follow competitive Gwent, I think you should probably know me. Maybe, possibly, but yeah. No, jokes aside, I'm just trying as hard as I can to accomplish as much as I can in Gwent in this year, basically competitively. And yeah, that's what I'm doing.
And Danny?
I'm Danny. I play for Team Legacy, and I basically lost an open quarterfinal once. For now, that's about it from my Gwent accomplishments, although I tend to play any tournament I can, I mean the community ones. And yeah, I hope to in the future become a world champion, probably not this year, but maybe the next one, or like however how long the Gwent will last, I don't know.
Yeah, I always see Danarai in all the community tournaments, like the Quillen Cups and whatnot. Definitely someone that likes to play in any tournaments given, pretty much. Speaking of tournaments given, we do have the TLG Invitational coming up soon, so that's going to be an exciting community tournament, biggest community tournament, I believe, that's pretty much going to exist, I think, coming up in June. I mean, the previous one was the biggest one, so I can only assume this one will be bigger and better. It's going to be
Are you going to tell everyone it's next week? This is what you did last time. So it was like, oh, and the TLG Invitational, which is later this month. It's in July, by the way.
I kind of might have mixed up the dates, but yeah, July. So still a while away, but definitely something you should put in your calendars and mark that down.
Okay, so in terms of last season, I think we should start with qualifiers. Just because I know, Shaggy, you love a good qualifier, don't you?
Oh, I certainly do, Jack. Yeah, I mean, for anyone who doesn't know, in all four of the top four, in all four of the last qualifiers for the Open number one, I placed in the top four, and in the very last one, I actually managed to qualify. So definitely quite a journey there. Yeah,
yeah, that's definitely. I mean, I'm curious from your perspective. Were you like super nervous going to the last qualifier because of the fact that you were so close in all the other ones that like. This was kind of like your last chance for the first Open to get in. Was it like any more pressure on you on this the last top 64 qualifier, or did you kind of just treat like any other qualifier?
I would say I prepared more seriously for the last one than I did for the others. I wouldn't say I really got nervous about it, but I was definitely like super hungry for it. I was like, oh god damn it, this is gonna be it, man. I gotta make it this time. This was like my mindset going in, basically. So yeah, just prepared for like 3 or 4 days for the qualifier, and then the only time where I actually the nerves got to me was in the like last game against Hankook when I was actually so close. I was like, please don't let me lose. This is one game, one game, and I'm in the open. God damn it, give me that one win. That's when the nerves got to me a bit.
What's interesting is you're the niche situation that they made the rules about crown points for. Because there was this concern that someone would like do top three, top four, like 3 times and then qualify, which means if you got crown points for coming third, like 3 times and then also got crown points for qualifying, you'd end up with more crown points than someone who qualified in the very first tournament. So that's why there's this weird point system where if you come third, you do get pity points, but I think you get like one pity point or something like that. It's not very many.
Yeah, I don't really like the system as it is right now. Basically, you get, I think, 5 crown points for placing first in a qualifier and 4 for placing second. But if you place third or fourth, you only get one single crown point. And only your best finish matters. So, for example, say I would not have made it in for placing top 3 in, or like top 4 in 3 qualifiers. I got like one single crown point for all 3 put together, where like somebody who qualifies once gets 5 or 4 immediately. So I think there's like a bit of a disparity there, and I don't think it makes a lot of sense that third and fourth place basically get just scraps, and the qualifying people take home the lion's share of the crown points anyways, right? Like they are qualified anyways. They don't really need the extra crown points on top. It's more for the third and fourth place that I'm missing.
Yeah, it's a tricky one though, because if you have a situation with crown points where if you qualify, you're not competing anymore, then you can't then gain more crown points from coming third or fourth. And that was the situation I think they're trying to avoid, is, you know, punishing people who qualify early, I guess. It's a difficult situation though to like do it in the best way that kind of benefits everyone. And at least now we're getting crown points for third and fourth, whereas last season we didn't.
Yeah.
It's definitely, I'm not sure what the best solution would be for it though, because as mentioned, like it's kind of not easy to, if you give too many crown points, then I suppose that's, as Jagger's mentioned, if someone does, as you did, qualify or place quite highly in all of them and then only qualify in the last one, then you get a lot of crown points, where someone else that maybe qualifies early on doesn't get the opportunity to get those crown points either. So I'm not 100% sure what the best approach would be to kind of rectify that if they were to change it.
Yeah, my suggestion to fix it would not be that you like get multiple like crown points for multiple top 4 finishes. For example, like if you place top 4 in all 4 qualifiers, you shouldn't get more than someone who placed top 4 in just one. What I think should be the case is that like the top 4 all get like a set amount of crown points. Like for example, everyone who places top 4 in at least one of the 4 qualifiers per open gets 4 or 5 crown points or whatever, like something like that. Because it doesn't, like, there's not as big of a disparity between first and second and third and fourth as there is now.
Yeah.
So instead of rewarding someone who, like you did, came third or fourth, like, a few times, just make it so that everyone who comes third or fourth gets, like, 3 points or something along those lines. It's an interesting argument, I think. Like, you can kind of make cases for different ways. We'll have to see at the end of the season how much these crown points play into the final result. You know, if it happens to be that the person who qualifies is like 10 crown points above the previous person, then maybe it doesn't matter. But when it's 1 or 2 crown points, that's where it could have had a big impact.
Yeah. I got a question for Danra. Obviously, the new patch just came out. What are your thoughts on the latest changes? Do you think it's relatively small compared to previous ones, but how do you feel about the current changes, all the current changes?
I mean, I always like when they're buffing the cards that don't see any play. But I think the only significant changes, this patch would be Drill, which also doesn't change much, right? Like you downgrade one card and it's still going to be played in every syndicate. And then there's the nice change for the Purify cards. So basically cards like Ida, Queen of the Night, they got a... They basically are 6 provisions now, not 7. I think this is sort of a change that can actually matter. Like, I could see, for example, I don't know, playing Queen of the Night or Ida instead of the 5 provision factional Purify now, because you just have like an optional melee row second ability. So yeah, I think that change is cool. And the other ones are kind of whatever, right? Like no one plays Prophet Lebioda or any of those cards.
They kind of like do it. They kind of just like they do some change, and every now and then they buff these cards that see no play, and they still don't see play until eventually they buff it enough and the card sometimes eventually will start seeing play, which I guess they might do a couple of times with things like Prophet Lebioda and whatnot. But I also like what you mentioned with the fact they're buffing cards like Ida, these purified cards, because they were in a kind of weird spot. They were in this kind of position in the deck where A lot of the time, you want to make your deck very high provision cards and very low provision cards. And these tech cards, these like 6-7 P cards aren't often very good. They try to buff things like locks recently. They put them most of them down to like 6 provisions, which was quite a good change. And it seems like they're doing the same thing with these purified cards now, which I actually quite like. Makes them have more, you know, spots, easier to fit in the deck and more worthwhile.
When you look at the provisions, though, you know, these cards used to be 7 provisions. And then Tunnel Drill was 6 provisions. So when you think about, like, what do you get out of the provisions? You have Tunnel Drill at 6 provisions, you know, doing Tunnel Drill things. And then you have, like, these cards at more provisions, 7 provisions, doing far, far less. And now they've kind of just traded places. I still think Tunnel Drill is a fantastic card. And I think it's still, for the provision, like, 1 provision is nothing.
Yeah, really. they'll find a way to put it, just to keep the deck the same and still put it in, basically. It's still a very good card.
Yeah,
shouldn't change too much.
I don't know. I'm okay with Syndicate being good. I feel like Syndicate's one of those factions. I don't know about you guys, but I'm okay with Syndicate being top of the meta compared to some of the other factions, because I feel like there's at least a level of skill with money management and stuff. Maybe it's too good, but opinions.
Yeah, I mean, Syndicate, I mean, one of the qualifiers, I think it was top 16 qualifier, I think. Syndicate was 100%, at least Line Pocket Syndicate was 100% bring rate. That's a word. Literally every single player brought it, which is quite high. And that doesn't often happen where you have like every single person bring the exact same pretty much deck. I mean, obviously a few minor changes, but for the most part, the same deck. So definitely a high performing deck. And I expect it probably will still do quite well this season. Not much is going to change, I think, this season. The meta should still remain mostly the same, I think. I don't know. Do you guys think there's going to be any change in the meta? Are there any like decks that you guys have on your radar that you think might have benefited from some of these changes?
I don't think there's going to be like much different to last meta at all. I think the changes from the patch were just too insignificant in terms of the top tier meta decks. Like, none of the buffs seem like they bring in a different archetype or an entirely different deck to life. And none of the nerfs the nerf to Syndicate is not significant enough. So I would expect basically exactly the same meta with maybe slightly different deck choices here and there.
Yeah, I would say even if there are like no changes or very little changes, if another season will be played on the same patch, people will somehow find a way to make something new. Like, I could see, for example, the trap deck being more popular because it had pretty good scores at the end of the season. And at first, Skoya seemed like the worst faction, at least for me. And also, people could play the deck Specimen played, like, you know, the Shieldwall Witchers.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had a pretty good score. And it is something that you don't often see. And people tend to just play with decks that are like, fresh and new. The best example would be the Nova Cloggers from like 2 seasons ago, where basically 70% of the ladder played it just because Ciri Nova was never a good card. So everyone just wanted to see what the hype is about.
Yeah. Plus, like, Sucris now has Pirate category, so maybe we'll see Pirate. I don't know. I feel like in the past when we've had patches or new seasons where nothing has really changed, I think there was one period of time where it was like 2 or 3 months without any significant changes, if at all. And the meta still kind of evolved in that period. But it depends on the state of the meta at that point, right? Because if you feel like Syndicate, for example, if people are arguing whether it's like tier 0, like it can't really be beaten easily, then that's maybe not possible. But we'll see. I don't know. I feel like people will get sick of playing Syndicate. Plus, you have to play more than one faction.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, like the how people find new decks. I mean, we've had metas in the past. If you look back, and this is a very old example, but open beta, the last like meta of open beta was like this one like several month long meta where there was no balance changes for like 6, 7, 8 months or something like that, and still new decks were being played and discovered as time went on, because at some point people try experiment with things, and you know, every now and then a new deck will pop up. So whilst the meta itself hasn't really changed or isn't really going to change from card changes, I think people might, you know, you never know, people might experiment with some stuff and maybe something will pop up, who knows.
But in terms of the last season versus this season, last season was only, what, 3 weeks? And I believe this next season is 5? How do we...
Yes.
Okay, so how do we feel, I guess, pro players, how do we feel that season length impacts the outcome on ladder? Short seasons versus long seasons.
I think it's always better to have longer seasons because, well, basically the spammers get the advantage when the season's shorter. I think what matters the most are like the last 2 weeks of a season. And in a season that lasts 3 weeks, one of those weeks basically got cut out. So I could say that the season being 1 week longer is actually twice as long as the regular one, just because basically all the grinding happens in the very end of the season anyways. I don't know if that's going to be the case with this season because people already know the meta, but I still like to see the longer seasons. I just don't know if this was necessary. If this season is 5 weeks long, then maybe they could have basically done both seasons 4 weeks long instead. But like, yeah. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I found that quite odd. I mean, I'm surprised they didn't end up making... Because usually seasons end on Tuesdays, and it was quite weird that the season ended on Thursday. I'm not sure why they didn't just make this last season end on a Tuesday and then make this coming season, you know, a little bit shorter, whilst last season being a bit longer. It's a bit of a weird decision to me. But to play devil's advocate on your point about long versus short seasons, I think that as a competitive player, you obviously would prefer the longer seasons. But as a casual player who wants like new content and new stuff, maybe you prefer shorter seasons because it means new, you know, things are happening more frequently, I guess. But yeah, as a competitive player, it definitely does benefit to have, you know, longer seasons, as it's not so much about how many games you can put in, but more the quality of the games instead.
Shaggy, what do you think?
Yeah, it's definitely right. Like from a casual perspective, or just from a playing the game non-competitively perspective, you want like as many shakeups to the meta and as many balance changes and new content as possible. So shorter seasons make sense from that perspective. But yeah, from a competitive perspective, I definitely prefer like longer seasons. There's no question about it. Short seasons are quite stressful with like a lot of grinding in a very short amount of time to keep up with people who just play like a lot of games in a short period of time.
So
and I also get to relax a bit in like the first week of this season, for example. I'm not planning to play too much Gwent and not planning to start my tryharding all too quickly. I have a bit of time to chill now that I'm coming down from the grind of last season, basically.
So there's a couple arguments there. Do casual players, if casual players don't play as much, then surely they get bored slower of the meta because they haven't played as many different decks in the same period of time. So while you suggest that casual players want new content, surely casual players are happy with the content that exists for longer.
I guess it depends on how casual, right? Like if you're someone that plays Gwent like once every 2 weeks, then I guess it doesn't. You probably don't really notice. But I mean, there's some casual players that will play like I'm more referring to like casual players that maybe play like one, like play like maybe 2 or 3 games a day at most, and maybe like 1-2 games every second day, something like that. They know the meta, they know what's happening, but they don't really they don't grind the game.
Mm-hmm. And then my other kind of question or observation, as it were, is that while we've argued that shorter seasons lead to better play or players who jam more ending up higher, do those players that jam more qualify for Opens? You know, has shorter seasons allowed people to qualify who wouldn't necessarily, or are they just earning more crown points as a result?
I would say it's more crown points. Like, you still need to be very good at the game to qualify. And if you like, I mean, I wouldn't even say you can get like top 16 by just playing games, you know. It's not like that either. It's just like,
yeah, it's easier, I guess. You go well, more beneficial, I suppose. By
yeah, exactly. It's just a bit easier to reach like a good placement on a ladder if you play a lot more games. That's just basically what it comes down to.
Yeah.
So then, I guess the question is: does it maybe doesn't matter that those players got crown points more easily, but the issue is that those crown points are being taken away from someone, where it could impact them. you know, if there's a consistent player that for some reason a short season denies them a top 16 or what have you, or tops whatever, then they lose out on one or two crown points. This is where it becomes interesting, is you have to kind of wait till the end of the season to find out how much is that going to matter. You know, like how much are these small amounts of crown points that people maybe gain or lose actually going to impact World Masters?
I'm not 100% sure how it will matter, because if someone takes away the crown points, takes away from all the other like serious players, that makes sense. So yeah. I mean, it's hard to actually to figure out how much it actually impacts, because while they're taking away points from, let's say, player A, they're also taking away points from player B, C, D, and those players are really competing against each other. So it doesn't really matter in that sense if you're taking away from the combined group of players, but I'm not sure how much of an impact it actually makes.
I think it's less about crown points and more about just, because people that want to qualify to Masters through crown points will overcome the spammers anyway, right? And will finish in like top 8. But it's more about just those spammers stealing top 16 spots for players that, for example, had less games but could qualify from top 16. That's at least how I feel about it. But of course, like if someone fought for the sport, then someone deserved it. And that's like up to him what he will like do with the spot, right, in the qualifiers. But I think the crown points matter only for a couple of people, and it's kind of, we can already see who's like gonna play on Masters. If it's gonna basically keep up until the end of the year, and yeah, I don't think crown points matter that much, apart from like maybe 10 players.
Yeah. Also, I'm kind of curious so who are all the players that qualified for this upcoming Open? It was Bart, Forever YOLO, and then there was Cams, Payable, obviously Shaggy, who else was there?
I'm forgetting.
Tailbot, Redrim, Gravesh.
And Gravesh, yes. And Gravesh.
Is that 8? Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
A lot of Team Polish, actually. I mean, a lot of players from Poland. I must say, the last qualifier, if it went in a certain way, it could almost be like almost exclusively Polish at one point. It was crazy. A lot of Polish players qualified.
Yeah, but overall, there's good representation across the teams, right? We've got TLG, and we just picked up Forever YOLO. So I think this is how we're just going to pick up people who qualify. Now, like Payable and Gravesh and Cams, they were already on TLG before they qualified. But Team Artusa has what, Shaggy and Redrame, and then Legacy is Bart.
Bart and Tailbot.
So it's a fairly broad spectrum, like across the teams. It's not like one team. You know, every team has at least two players. Every team that is there, shall we say, has two players.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see. I'm curious. This is a Gwent Masters season 3. I'm looking forward to watching one of the Gwent Opens, seeing how, you know, things are shaking up this season around. I hope that eventually we get back to, like, obviously it's not possible now with the virus the way it is, but I really hope that in the future sometime we get to go back to the LAN events, because those were something special about them, right? Like watching the LAN events as opposed to online. I don't know if you guys feel the same, but I kind of miss those spectacles, I guess you could say.
Man, I miss them so much, I've got to tell you. Like, being at a LAN event versus just playing in an open online is like an entirely different experience. Like, some of my best memories like from Gwent is just hanging out at these LAN events with other Gwent players and CDPR employees and just having a good time and talking about the game, just hanging out, and great time, honestly. I just miss these live events. They're just a great time every time.
Yeah, if you speak to anyone who's been to a Gwent event, either a caster, CDPR, players, as a fan, they're always so much fun just from a social perspective. Like, it's good just to hang out with other Gwent fans and, you know, drink a beer and play board games. And like, there's a lot of that sort of thing going on, or like hang out in someone's hotel room and play Mario Kart, and these kind of things happen. It's not just like, it's not just Gwent. Whereas I feel like the online format, you lose a lot of that when you compete online, that you don't have that moment of kind of socializing. You don't have the nerves, you don't have the discussion. Like from casting, for example, it's a lot easier to talk to the players and ask them questions in person than it is to kind of try and message people through, you know, Twitter or Discord or whatever to try and have a discussion about decks or look at all these things. That is also more difficult, I think. And then for players with language barriers, the translators, they have a translator. Oh, yes. So you can then, you know, more easily ask, say, Hannah-chan or Wang ID what their strategy is, because there's someone there who can translate for you. So that is something that I think we lose. And we also still haven't had World of Masters 1, have we?
Yeah, I think we got the date for that, I think it was, they said December or this year or sometime. I think they announced recently.
This year. 2 years later.
Yeah, it's been a cursed event. It just seems like it's just always getting stopped no matter what. But hopefully we get to see it sometime this year. I don't think it's going to be able to be hosted in a LAN event either this year. I'm not 100% sure, but it's kind of a shame because with the virus still ongoing, causing these events to be taken online, because it really was quite something to see these events happen in LAN.
I'm trying to think who even qualified for that. Like Life Coach.
Yeah. I mean, he's given up his spot already, but there's a lot of players.
Tailbot. Yeah. Like, how many of these people still play Gwent?
Some of them still do, but, but a lot of them haven't really played much.
Oh, funny. I'm trying to even think. I guess like who's in World Masters 1, right? So Life Coach, but he's probably not going. We're gonna say he's not going.
He's not going.
Demorcus, Tailbot. Freddy. Those three I know won a challenger. Magpie, he won a challenger. And Magpie's then it's Crown Points, right?
Colomon,
okay, so yeah. He still plays.
I can't remember. It's Confidence, Abtikoff. I think Pro Neo is going to go back in, I think, because the whole ban is now...
how does that work?
After its expiration date, I guess you could say.
So he wasn't going to go because of his ban, but his ban has now expired. That can't be how it works.
For like 1 year. They banned him from competitive events for 1 year, but within that 1 year, World Masters 1 was not held, so I suppose technically he gets his spot back now.
Is that how
such
it works?
A weird one.
I would love it that's how it works. That's just hilarious. But then who loses their spot? Like...
The spot that was going to get taken from, it was kind of funny, the spot that was going to get taken from Life Coach, I think, was initially going to go to, Pronia was first on the line, but he got banned. So then it went down to Hannah-chan, but then because of the virus situation at the time, Hannah-chan couldn't go. So then it was going to go down to Casper, and the whole event got cancelled. Now we go back up the line to Pronia, I guess.
Could you imagine? He'll get banned before then. It's a long time. That's a joke. It's just a joke. I feel like I need to clarify that by being like, that's just a joke. I don't know. I think competitive Gwent's a weird one. Like, it goes so quick. I feel like you forget everything that happened. Would you agree? Like, if you ask me who won, actually, no, Pyreball won World Masters last year. But like, if you ask me who played, at least for me, because I watch so many events and I'm involved in so many events, they all just blur together. Like, I have like brief moments of memories from different events.
I don't know. I kind of remember quite a few of them. It's just the Gwent scene has changed quite a lot. There's a lot new players nowadays, and the scene is definitely different players, different high, like top tier players. Some are still the same. Obviously, we do see a lot of veterans like Kulamon still playing Gwent. But there's definitely a lot of, you know, new blood in the scene for sure.
Oh, that's a good question though. How do you guys feel about old Gwent blood versus new Gwent blood? Shaggy, you're officially old Gwent blood at this point, just for the record. Because you kind of played a bunch that disappeared then came back, so you can't be new blood even though you're kind of returning.
I would say I'm both old and new blood, right? Like, I used to be old blood, but then I quit the game and then I returned to the game after a few months, so then I was like, I'm technically new blood again, right?
Yeah, some people wouldn't even know about the hashtag nuts for Shaggy. They'll be like, what is this? Do you know about that, Spiro?
Not quite. I do remember I was playing back in the day when Shaggy played the first event, like way back in the day, but I don't recognize a hashtag.
It's because the Play Gwent people were trying to do like, they were like Team Shaggy or Team Freddy. And then for some reason it became a hashtag Babes for Babes, as in like
all the babes
are fans of her. And then I feel like someone suggested hashtag Nuts for Shaggy because it's Shaggy's nuts or whatever it is that your name is.
Speaking of new blood, we also have, of course, Danerai, who I think would be well in the category of new blood. I think one of the younger players, youngest, definitely up in like youngest compared to players in Gwent, I would say. I guess Danerai. How does it? You obviously. When did you start playing Gwent? By the way, have you been playing Gwent for like off the radar for a while, or did you just like pick up the game and start grinding away?
So I installed the game in December 2017, but I only played for like a week and got bored. And I came back, I guess, right before beta ended, like for the last month or two. And then Homecoming happened. And the game was in a really bad state for like a couple of months since Homecoming launched. But I sort of didn't know that because I was new to the game, so I kept playing. and at that time when the game was like getting better and better, I also made it to pro rank and then started playing community tournaments, and now I guess it's too late to quit.
That must be such a lovely perspective. Yeah. To have not realized how bad Homecoming was at the time, because that's your first experience. So you're just like, this game just keeps getting better and better. And everyone else is like, it's so bad.
Ignorance is bliss, right?
I know. It's like so naive. It's just adorable. I wish I had that experience of Homecoming. Oh dear. So upcoming qualifiers. So we've got this month is what? Top 16. Top 64 and then open one?
Yep.
Yes.
How do we think tournament meta gets impacted by that sort of sequencing where you have like two tournaments right before an event on the same kind of patch? Because usually with opens, there's often like a patch and then 2 weeks later there's an open. Like in a lot of the cases when there's been these sorts of events, there's not been a lot of tournaments right before it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I kind of whenever these like these qualifiers happen, what I think usually happens is there's always these decks that are quite out there. Some of them are so out there no one actually even dares try them on ladder. But sometimes it's a deck that makes just enough sense that people they see it in a tournament and then suddenly like ladder gets kind of full of that deck. And you saw this happen with I think Tailbot's it was like a Madoc Skellige deck. A couple of seasons before last season, and then a lot of people tried it on ladder and it did perform kind of well on ladder. Some people got some good scores with it, and I do think that it's especially the top 16 qualifiers kind of also in a way shape the meta for top 64 qualifiers. People get ideas from it. People like when they prep for the top 64 qualifiers, they kind of think to themselves, all right, what do people bring for the top 16 qualifiers? They go through the deck list, okay, there's a lot of this deck. It's get an idea of what we want to maybe ban or how we want to build our decks, and I think that's also might also somewhat follow through or carry over somewhat into the open.
Actually, the deadline to send deck lists for open is like a week before the open happens. So it's basically the same day that a winner of top 64 is known. So,
oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And I remember when I was sending my decks, I basically looked at what Colemon brought because he won the qualifiers and I took the deck list.
Is that your strategy?
Yeah, I wasn't like very well prepared for the open for that reason.
Well, I mean, definitely the top 16 qualifier meta is going to shape like the environment in which we prepare for the open. Like basically it's just going to give us context and give us decks that we want to keep in mind when preparing for the open, basically. I think the chance for me just copying a lineup from top 16 qualifier is very low, but like whatever people bring there and whatever does well there definitely impacts the preparation for the open and has an impact on the open meta for sure.
Also interesting thing is that, sorry. No, I think it's interesting that often people bring the decks and then they they see how other decks perform, and they say, okay, this line performed well, why did it perform well? And they can understand why it performed well. Whereas sometimes if you build a line from scratch, you don't really understand what, if it's like the first qualifier, you can bring a very risky lineup, and it might actually in actuality be terrible, and it just falls apart. Whereas if other people do that, test it before you, they do badly, you can go, okay, so we know that doesn't work, I'm not going to waste my time doing that, I'm going to try to go for this instead.
I guess there's like pros and cons, right? If you're a top 16 player who's also playing an open one, you kind of have this opportunity to practice your lineup. But then on the other hand, if there's something that you're like, oh, I've got this really sneaky idea, and I think this is going to be really good. If you use it for your top 16, then everyone knows about it for the open. So if you have some kind of like ace up your sleeve that you think is going to be a surprise or a list that no one's really expecting, it's a risk to take. You kind of want to play it in top 16 because then you can qualify for another open, but you kind of don't want to play it in top 16 because then you might not win open one. Do you see the kind of contradiction there?
Yeah, it's definitely there. Like, you can treat the top 16 qualifiers basically like a round with training wheels on, right? Like, you get to try your lineup for the open, see if it actually works or not. But as you said, if that is like a super, like a kind of revolutionary idea or something like pretty spicy, something that people like, you're trying to keep like catch people unaware with, and giving it away in the top 16 qualifier is not a great idea, and you might just want to keep it secret and keep it like in in-house testing basically.
I'm stressed, so, yeah, like thinking about it, and I don't even have to prepare any decks. Like, I feel like that must be a really, that's a tough position, I think, for teams to prepare, because you have to make it, you have to make decisions about, you know, your strategy, and that can have massive consequences, right? Because this we're talking about World Masters at this point. If you win open one, you're in World Masters, so there's a lot on the line. And I don't know. This is why I like watching Gwent rather than playing Gwent. It's much less stressful.
Yeah, I don't think I'm bringing my open lineup for top 16 as a practice round. I think like getting like trying your lineup in the top 16 qualifier before the open is like overrated basically. Like, if your lineup works in testing, it should also work in practice. You don't have to like go for that test round, I think.
But if your lineup works in practice or in testing, then surely it's the best lineup.
Exactly.
In which case you should take it to top 16 as well. Unless you don't want other people to have your lineup. Oh my god, it's too stressful. I can't do it.
Yeah, it's actually a bit tricky to figure out. If you have like a lineup that you think is actually the best lineup for the current meta, right? Do you bring it to top 16 or not if you're in the open? That's actually a good question.
So, okay, Gravish is in the chat. He can answer it for us.
It's definitely something you got to keep in mind, right? Like, sometimes you have good ideas and you bring it, and then like people will take the idea if they see it. Like, there was a qualifier, it was quite a while ago, like over a year ago now, back when Eldarbane Nilfgaard was the thing with Damien Steffen. And I remember in the day one, I was talking to Pyball when we were prepping, and we kind of came to the idea of bringing the lock for Ramon to try and tech for the mirror, and no one else brought that in day one. And then day two, suddenly everyone's Nilfgaard deck also had the lock. So it's definitely something you got to keep in mind. Like, if you bring in a good idea, people are going to probably end up using it potentially against you. So got to kind of maybe sometimes withhold the ideas for when you think they're going to come into the most effect.
Yeah. So the logic there is to bring trash. Right, just bring trash. It's fine. They can't copy you if your decks are terrible. I was going to swear there, but we're a non-swearing podcast. Eventually, this is the first one so far we've had no swearing, I think. So let's keep it that way for now, so we don't get told off by
family-friendly stream.
Otherwise, we have to be like on Apple. We have to be like, this is explicit. This explicit Gwent podcast. So if you're going to bring trash decks, what do you bring? That's the question. What's your lineup, Danarai? If you're bringing exclusively trash decks,
It has to be Enslave 7, the cherry on top. And then I guess I could figure something out with those like bad leaders. You know, there's Invigorate, there's Stockpile. it sucks for your open and that he has to ban one of those decks though. Like, you'd probably want to face all of them.
Don't ban anything. I'm not going
to
ban
anything. That's why the fourth deck in your lineup is just going to be a SY, so they know what to ban and they don't have to feel bad.
Yeah, honestly, that's a good strategy when you're like memeing, because then you get the... You're basically assured they'll ban this deck, right? Like taking a ban magnet. But yeah.
But then on the other hand, when you don't have a ban magnet, then people overthink the ban. Like if there's not an obvious ban, they're like, right, I'm going to ban Syndicate. And then your opponent doesn't have Syndicate. Now they're like, oh no, I have to think about my ban. What do I do? Well, and then you have to actually like use your brain. And I feel like I've seen some questionable bans in tournaments just because there was no obvious ban.
Funny you should mention ban magnets. I remember back in the day when like Hidden Cache was completely overpowered. I remember there was something, I think it was Gravation. I think someone else did it too. They literally brought Peasant Militia in their deck just to try bait their opponent into not banning Syndicate. Say, look at this. I got a random bad Peasant Militia. The deck's terrible. Don't ban it. It's fine. You don't ban it. You see Peasant Militia, don't ban it, which I found quite funny.
So you're saying
that was amazing. I saw those deck lists in the Hidden Cache meta.
So what you're saying is bring lined pockets, but put some trash cards in there to bamboozle them into thinking that it's not really, really good in spite of the trash cards. I think
Gravish did it, actually. The last qualifiers. He had like a four provision filler card as well.
As in the one that he won? Like the one that he qualified for?
Yeah, the one he won, I think.
Oh, but Gravish, he can't use that strategy twice, though. We've just discussed that. Like he's shown his cards. But like he's shown the strategy, so now you can't reuse it.
It should work again. People are gonna fall for it again and again.
Like it could be, you have that moment where you're like, but is this an actual good strategy? Like, is Peasant Militia secretly good?
No. It's not. I can assure you it's not.
Yeah, but there'll be people on ProLadder who are like, oh, this is genius. You know, they'll completely overthink it. I'll be like, but the reason that this is good is this very niche scenario where somehow it like benefits you way more than it should.
You would have to be really gullible to think Peasant Militia is actually good. Oh, no. It's like a worse wolf pack even. And that's not a good card to begin with.
No, listen. You use it to boost one of your cleaver's muscles up to 7 so your front row doesn't get ignited after your cleaver gets removed. And
oh, you can also use it to play around Bloodthirst for Iced.
Yeah, exactly. Genius tech.
I really hope we see Peasant Militia at some point now. We've got like 3 tournaments this month, so someone's going to have to do it.
It's not gonna be me, sorry.
Shaggy, I'm disappointed in you. It's almost as if you want to win or something.
Yeah, almost does sound like that.
Spiro, you're gonna have to take one for the team.
No, I'm not. Danra can do it.
It's decided.
I'm not even gonna play in the top 64 this month, actually. So I can't do it either. Yeah.
Oh no.
All right, next month you can do it. You like memeing anyway, right?
I'm upset, you guys. Now I'm going to have to qualify.
Jaggers is open.
I know, right? What is this? No, you're not allowed to play in events if you cast them. So no Jaggers is open.
You can bring Peasant Militia in all your decks to make
it. I will. It'll be like that token it's 4 provisions, right? This is where it's not 4 provisions. That token slot, you know, just if you switch out one card, it becomes your deck. So if I put Peasant Militia in instead of one card, then that they're now my decks that I made. Now. Yeah, exactly. True. That's how it works. Like that's the only reason Gravish brought Peasant Militia is because he wanted it to be his own deck. Otherwise, people would accuse him of copying.
Yeah, no bigger crime than netdecking, am I right? I've never netdecked a single deck in my entire Gwent career, by the way.
Never.
All original decks. All
You're the one who makes the decks. You're the one who is netdecked. Spiro, have you ever netdecked a deck?
Absolutely not. Never done it before. Never ever touched any deck lists or anything. Just all original, all homebrews.
See, back in the day, I used to homebrew. And then you still get accused of net decking. So at that point, it's like, I mean, I may as well do it. If you're going to tell me I'm doing it, then I may as well do it. And so since then, I've never made a deck in my entire life. I don't even know what a deck is at this point. I don't know how you add cards. Yeah, I don't know how you change cards in Gwent. It's been that long since I made a deck. I'm like, how does the deck builder even work? Someone's going to take that out of context and be like, Jaggers does this. This is the problem with podcasts when you make stupid statements like that. Spirit, do we have anything else to talk about?
I think that's pretty much everything. Again, this is going to be a little bit of a, say off season. It's going to be a little bit of a down season in terms of like new content because the with new Gwent's new cycle, we're having one big patch with like a mini expansion, then more of a small balance change, then one bigger patch again. So this is going to be the month where it's going to be, you know, kind of waiting for new content next month, and then more of a refinement, I guess you could say, of the previous meta. And then obviously next month we'll have new stuff again. But yeah, not really much happening in terms of when coming.
Okay, but sites, we can take some questions from the chat. So while we wait for some questions from the chat, if you guys could change your Gwent name, because apparently that's the trendy thing to do now, is change your in-game name. We'll ask Shaggy and Dana this. If you could change your Gwent name to anything, I'm not sure why you're doing it, but what would you change it to? What were you going to be if you were going to not be Danarai, or if you were going to not be Shaggy?
I actually changed my nickname a couple of times before.
What did you used to be?
For a month, I was Dani Ragequit. And I also used to smurf on community tournaments as I Don't Flinch for a month. And people didn't know that was me until like someone discovered it. And I also used to have a different nickname before Danirai, but it was very similar to the current one. But if I had to, I wouldn't actually change the nickname, because you're running at the risk that someone's going to steal your original nickname. Like, for example, I know Ilyuha can't go back to his nickname because some Russian guy stole his nickname and he didn't want to change it back. So he has to stay as...
Yeah, it happened to Gravesh.
You could just change
the
name. Yeah, or you could just change it to like Dark Iluha XXXD. That seems to be the growing trend in name changing.
No, as soon as Gravesh changed his name, and bear in mind his name is Gravesh, it's not even Gravesh, but as soon as Gravesh changed his name, someone was like, oh, I'm going to be Gravesh now. So if he ever goes back, he's going to have to be like Gravesh or something like that.
Gravesh times three.
Yeah. Shaggy, what would you be?
I would never change my name, honestly. My name is too good. I'm too happy with my name.
It's quite iconic, to be fair.
Yeah. No, I am the Shaggy Nuts. I can't be anyone else anymore. It's too late at this point. Everyone knows that I'm the Shaggy Nuts. I know that I'm the Shaggy Nuts. I can't be anyone else.
It's like your brand.
Someone is just going to yoink my name anyways if I change it, so I literally cannot change it.
I would yoink your name if you changed it, to be fair.
Exactly, see?
And then it'd be like musical chairs, and someone else would be...
You got a good suggestion.
It'd be weird.
What is the suggestion?
You got a good suggestion from Cyber saying you can always change to D's Shaggy Nuts.
D's Shaggy Nuts, fun times. Do we have any questions from the chat, or did they get like bamboozled by our discussion about name changing?
Bamboozled. Chat got bamboozled. Chat died, unfortunately.
Oh, it's okay. Well, I had a question, so I feel like I've done my part for the podcast. Spiro, now you have to come up with a question quickly. Quick, no stress.
Is it the end of the podcast?
Okay, well, if there's no questions, then I guess we can kind of wrap things up for this week. Or this, I say this week as if we're going to be on next week, this podcast, but this has been Zoinal TLG Podcast Episode 3. You can find us where all good podcasts are found. I don't know where you find podcasts, which is, you know, a thing like iTunes, I guess, and Spotify, probably. So if you're following us on there, then continue. And if you're not, then follow us. If you want to follow Shaggy, where do people follow you?
People can find me on twitch.com/ShaggyCCG. They can find me on Twitter under the same name. And yeah, that's about it.
Did you just say twitch.com?
Twitch.tv. I did just say twitch.com, didn't I?
Yeah, that was like...
How did you find it out?
That's weird.
I thought you would let it slide, but no. Apparently...
I'm a stupid like that.
I found out. I did say twitch.com. Oops.
Where can place for people find you, Danarai?
Currently only on Twitter, as I don't stream. Twitter, it is Danirai_Gwent. And yeah, hopefully... on Twitch, the same name in the future, as I have the camera now, so I could stream some. Yeah.
Don't do it. Spiro, would you recommend streaming Gwent? Here's a question.
Just mute chat. Let's put emote only mode. There we go.
Is that better? I don't know. I feel like that's possibly worse. Because then you just have people just spamming emotes at you.
Well.
Is that better? The fact that that is better than your chat, I think, says a lot about the quality of your chat, that you would rather have them only being able to speak in emotes.
I mean, we got some good emotes with Ander. You just make Ander an emote mod, and then you get some good emotes, and then it's, you get some, then you don't mind the spam as much. Oh, unless they're demon spams, then it's demons and weep spam. That's kind of bonkers.
Weep spam. And on that note, I guess we'll just wrap up the podcast. So yeah, make sure you follow us on whatever platforms. You know where to find Shaggy and Danarai. And we'll be back, I guess. We're not doing a meta report one, are we? Because the meta's not changed enough for us to do a new meta report. We'll be back happens. That's
we'll add one deck in and
want to do another podcast about one deck.
Yes.
Why are you doing this to me? Anyway, we'll be back soon. Thank you so much for watching. And now we all smile and wave at the camera and say bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.